The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
Boston Red Sox enjoy a day off along with the rest of the league as the All-Star break commences. I'm Nick the Voice, joined tonight by Jason Kelly and Chris Felico. We are the Bastards of Boston doing some hot takes for the Tuesday episode. Have a lot of interesting things to talk about tonight. If you want more, you can always go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great written articles. And let's just jump right into it. Jason, Chris, where would you like to start tonight for this discussion?
Want me to go first, Jay?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. So, got an interesting one here from a Zach Toback, at Zach Toback on Twitter X, and his tweet to our post was, if they're serious about winning, you don't trade Duran. You start working him out at second base, the position he played his entire time in college and parts of his minor league career. You move Story to DH to mitigate risk of a fielding injury and move Mayer to his natural shortstop position. What's your thoughts, guys?
So immediately, I like the premise of what he's saying because I've kind of leaned now more towards not trading Duran and just kind of letting Alex Cora figure out the outfield shuffle as we go forward here. And I sent out a tweet the other day saying that having too much talent is not a problem. It's something that you want as you pursue a playoff spot. But I don't like the idea of putting Duran at second base. I think it's too far removed from him now. Like, he's an outfielder. You just have to accept the fact that he's an outfielder. And I think you have to accept the fact that going forward, you're going to see Sadon Rafaela getting some reps at second base. It's just, it's the open position once, you know, now that Bregman is back. So it's going to be Sadon and Mayer kind of, you know, platooning at second base. I don't think that's the worst thing. And I don't think it's going to happen too often, but because again, Rafael is just so elite in center field, but take advantage of the fact that he is versatile. And, you know, unlike some other players, he has no problem just switching positions every now and then. He'll go to second base to play it. It won't be as good as him playing center field, but at least you keep his bat in the lineup. Cause I think we can all agree now that Sadon's got to stay in that lineup as much as possible. You know, if you got a lefty on the mound, that's where you can sit Duran or you can sit Mayer. So there's ways that Cora can figure this out without having to put Jaron Duran at second base. Duran is already kind of losing some defense in the outfield. Like, he's had a rough year out there. I don't want to see him try and play second base. I know he did it in college, but this is, he's far removed from that now. And if he's already starting to lose his defensive ability in the outfield, I can't imagine what he would look like trying to turn a double play right now as a second baseman. So I don't want to see that. I agree with the premise. I don't want to trade Duran, but let Cora figure out the arithmetic and just go from there. But do not put Duran at second base. I'm okay with Rafaela going there because I think he's shown he can do it. Not Duran. Please keep him as far away from second base as possible.
You know, it's funny. Moving Durant over to second was actually something that I floated a little earlier in the season. And I think that it would make a lot more sense to try something kind of crazy like that if we needed a full-time solution at the position. Story's resurgence has kind of eliminated that need, as far as I'm concerned. We have our third baseman now in Bregman. We have our shortstop in Meyer or Story, take your pick. And then the other one can just go to second base, and that gives us a great defensive alignment. I agree that keeping Sedan in the lineup is just absolutely necessary at this point. I mean, that dude is developing so much as a hitter. It's just such a shame for me to move him to second base, because I saw that in defensive runs saved, he's actually leading the league. He's even better than Pete Crow Armstrong right now. He's got two more defensive runs saved, 15 compared to 13 to PCA, which is just unbelievable, because I mean, you look at PCA, he looks like a human highlight reel, and then you realize, oh wait, I don't need a guy like that on my team. I got PCA, but the plus version. You know what I mean? It's just beautiful to think about. I would like to exercise Durant at second base a little bit just to see what happens. I figure, what's the harm in more versatility? That seems to be kind of the Red Sox's MO lately, going back to the Heim Bloom era. You get guys who can play as many positions as possible. That way you can plug and play pretty much the hottest hands in the lineup. I like that. And it's kind of funny with Duran, because he had a very similar defensive trajectory to Mookie Betts, where they started as second baseman. They were so fast and so athletic, they were moved into the outfield to see if it could work. And from there, they ended up, well, one of them ended up moving back to the infield to great success, funnily enough. Mookie Betts moving to shortstop looked like an absolute disaster for the Dodgers, and it was for a time. He was messy, he was sloppy, he was out of focus. We said, this is a joke, this team is ridiculous. And then Mookie Betts shoved it all down our throats by saying, oh no, I'm actually a good shortstop now after a season. So I think it's an interesting idea to work Durant out at second base. If not this year, do it in the offseason. See if you can't get a little versatility. And maybe if he, whether he's on the Red Sox, the Padres, or any other team, maybe he can actually be that type of, not even utility, but a starter that just plays around, you know?
Yeah, those are all great points, guys. I'm going to take the approach I might take as if the only way we were able to keep Duran was if he's somehow in the mix at second base. And I think I would kind of take both of your approach and kind of try to mix them. I think because we have the flexibility of a Sedan Rafaela who can play second base, he's probably our best second baseman at this point. It's better than David Hamilton. And to be honest with you, Christian Campbell, forget about like the hitting woes. Even defensively, there was a lot of question marks with him earlier in their year. I would take advantage of the fact that now you could almost platoon a DH/center field/second base. Where Trevor Story could be DH a couple nights, he could also be second base. Same thing with Sedan Rafaela. He could either play center field or play second base. And then you could also have Duran DH when Story's in the field, right? And then also put him in the field when Sedan's at second base, and then Story at DH. So like, you have these combinations and flexibility to put your best lineup on any given night. And the good thing is, like, all three of them super athletic guys. You know, the one thing I would say about Duran, because I agree with you, Jason, like, it's been a while since he's been a second baseman at any high level of baseball. However, he's still young enough where I think if you get him the reps, even if you just kind of worked on a platoon where he's not necessarily playing in live games at second base, get him some reps to see if it's even plausible. He's athletic enough that I think he could probably pick it up. And he's definitely quick enough, and he has the lateral speed to be able to get from side to side. The question is, you know, is he going to turn double plays, right? Is he almost quote-unquote too athletic, where he's making twitchy plays that are just not coming off the right way? Playing second base is a lot different than obviously chasing the ball in the air in center field. But I would entertain it if you're telling me it's the only way we keep Duran, because I agree with you, Jason. I don't want Duran gone at this point, especially coming off of a 10-game winning streak and where the vibes now where it's like the Sox have to buy and we're not in seller mode. So...
yeah, and the other thing to consider too is, so you're finally starting to win games, you're finally starting to play better defense, that you're finally starting to hit, everything's coming together. Do you want to throw the complication of Jaron Duran trying to learn second base as he goes? And I say learn second base, I know he's played it before, but there are going to be, like you said, those twitchy moments where you know, tailor-made double play. Maybe he just double clutches the ball a little bit. It doesn't get made. And what if that costs you a game, right? And so now you're losing games because of defense, because you had to shoehorn Durant into second base just to justify keeping him in the lineup every day. That's what I worry about. I don't want this team reverting back to bad defense. It was so bad early in the year with Campbell out there. It just, you know, Toro was still kind of getting his feet wet. They put him at third base a couple of times, and he'd make like a great play, and then he'd make two throwing errors in a row. Like, it was just so herky-jerky. So I don't want them going back to that. I want them to keep playing the smooth, clean baseball they've been playing. And I think trying to introduce Jaren Duran back to second base, you're going to get moments like that where it's going to be too – they're going to rush him there too much. And even if they do take grounders with him, it's just – it's not going to be enough to get him, you know, fully settled into that position. And he's going to make some mistakes. And if those mistakes cost you games, you know, when you're chasing a wild card spot, that's going to come back and kill you. So I don't want that complication introduced.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point. The right side of the infield has been just a massive, massive issue for us this year defensively. Like you mentioned, Campbell has been terrible at second base. Romy in his time at second base has not been good. First base, Toro and Casas both were terrible defensively, worth, I think, like negative 10 defensive runs saved, I think, combined, which is just unbelievable to think about from a first base position. It's been really, really ugly. Now that we do have Story, like, I understand the idea of you want to keep Story healthy, right? You don't want him to get injured. But I feel like so much, he, as good as, you know, Story's value has been offensively, so much of his value just as a player comes from his defense, comes from his ability to field. And even though he hasn't looked the sharpest at shortstop all year long, his arm is questionable at times, his range is questionable at times, he's been coming out over the past few weeks and making some really flashy plays, really athletic plays. And that's at a position that I'm not even convinced he should be playing full time for us at shortstop. I think that having him in the lineup just as a full-time DH wouldn't quite justify him hanging around. I do think that he offers enough defensively to be able to put him and Meyer out there. And again, much to your point, Jason, I think that if we needed a full-time second baseman solution, and you know, maybe I could say, oh, well, you know, Campbell was terrible at second base. All these guys have been bad at second base. So who cares if Durant is bad at second base? You know, the offense is there, the defense isn't. But if we can have Story and Meyer in that middle infield and shore up the defense right now, I feel like you kind of have to go with that.
Yeah, 100%. I always put the best defensive team outfield out there that you can, and just don't mess with it, because right now things are going so well. It's just don't introduce any unnecessary complications. Core can figure it out. Some guys gonna have to sit every now and then. It's okay. We'll figure it out. Just don't screw up the defense, because that was killing you early in the year.
Agreed. All right, we'll move on to our next one. Let's see. It's a little simpler here. So we've got Uncle Killers. At Uncle Killers, it says they will be in the ALCS. What's your thoughts, guys?
Oof. Well, I certainly hope so. But right now, can we just focus on getting a wild card spot and hanging on to it? Because we were so far removed from that. Like, I'm riding the high too. Okay, the winning streak has been awesome. They've been playing terrific baseball. You know, getting Bregman back is going to help big time. You know, obviously, I think the vibes in the locker room are great. So that's all good. You've got a brutal stretch coming up in your schedule. You've got the toughest schedule in baseball in the second half. I mean, it's just, you're going to be facing teams like the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Phillies. You know, it's not going to be easy in the second half. So to fast forward and say already they're going to be in the ALCS, I mean, let's see if they even do it at the deadline, because I'm not convinced that if they get completely crushed these next 2 weeks and they fall out of it, that Breslow doesn't call back San Diego and go, so about that Jaren Duran trade, you want to revisit that? Because these guys, they can't figure it out. They just played the Dodgers and Cubs and lost six in a row. So no, you know, they showed us who they really are. There's still a chance that could happen. I mean, again, if they start to fall out of it and he gets a King's Ransom type of offer for Jaren Duran, how could he possibly say no? So that's still on the table. I think they can make the playoffs. Okay, I do. I think they can make the playoffs, but as a wild card. And then from there, it's get in and let's see, right? Who do you face in that first round? Who do you face in the ALDS, right? Are you facing a team like the Yankees, who I think that you can beat? Or are you facing, you know, I don't know, the Royals, who are pretty pesky? Are you facing Houston? Like, you know, you don't know. Are you facing Seattle, who might outpitch you? So it's going to depend on matchups. Right now, I can't convince myself that they're going to be in the ALCS. I think ALDS is on the table. I do. But again, a lot of it depends on these next 2 weeks and what they do with the trade deadline.
I agree. I think that this is going to be, I mean, I posted about it on Twitter, and it's funny because every time we hit like a new stretch of the season, I've said this is the most important stretch of the season so far. You know, going back to the 15-game series where it was, you know, the Yankees, the Rays, the Yankees again, the Mariners and the Giants. I said, that's going to make or break us. And it did to some extent. And now, funnily enough, I wasn't expecting this to be a 10-game winning streak that we've gone on, certainly. I didn't look at the Nationals and the Rockies. I said, yeah, we need to win those series. But I wasn't expecting this. I mean, this has been a huge tidal wave of momentum. I think that the Red Sox are the type of team where over our past, you know, you can really say 21 years of history, maybe even a little longer, we are a threat when we make it into the playoffs. We seem to do these deep runs. We love to absolutely smack our rivals around. You go back to 2021, stepping on the Yankees, ending their season. Same with the Rays, putting up a good fight against the Astros. 2018, absolutely embarrassing the Yankees in their own home. It really is like one of those things where the Red Sox are a team that if you're a rival of ours, especially a divisional rival, you do not want to allow this team to have life. You do not want to allow this team to get hot. And much to the Yankees and the Blue Jays' chagrin right now, and the Rays, I suppose, they've allowed us to get hot. I think that a division title still is in the cards, to be honest with you. We're only 3 games out right now. And interestingly enough, if you look at the Blue Jays, as good as the baseball that they've been playing has been, you look at the run differential in the wild card standings right now, you see the Blue Jays only have a positive run differential of 17. That's unbelievable. That's a Pythagorean record, an expected win loss of 50 wins, 46 losses. The Yankees have a plus 111. The Red Sox plus 61. That puts us above the Astros even in terms of run differential. And you can say that, you know, the Red Sox have had that skewed a little bit by the blowout wins here and there, but every team has those odd skewings. I think that the Sox right now, if we play decent baseball over these next 9 games, even if out of the 9 games, we only win 4 of them, you know, if we just put up a fight against these 3 great National League teams, I don't think that a division title is out of the cards so long as Craig Breslau buys. The guys need to play good enough baseball over these next 2 weeks to force Craig to buy. That's really what it comes down to. And then I think that if you're a rival of ours, be careful, man. Because if you allow the Sox to get into the playoffs, whether it's in a wild card or whether it's as a divisional holder, especially if it's as a divisional holder, I mean, I don't see why the ALCS would be out of the question at that point.
My, how things have changed in 10 games. I mean, think about even just like the national media, right? Like this hot takes the ALCS, but like everyone's got us in the World Series now at this point. And Ken Rosenthal is chirping about it. Meanwhile, like if you go back when we traded Devers, he was just completely crapping on us every damn day. So don't think I didn't forget Ken. But as far as the ALCS, I'm probably somewhere in between the two of you. Is it on the table? 100%. And I agree with you both. I think there's still a lot of work to be done, to your point, Jason. We can't put the cart before the horse here. A lot is going to happen in the next 9 games. And this is where I probably start to split the difference between the two of you, because I agree with you, Nick. If we make it, watch out. The Sox my whole life have either been feast or famine. When they make the playoffs, they generally make noise. Problem is they don't make it nearly as often as they should. They're not a perennial contender. They have very small pockets and windows in my lifetime where they've been a contender, but there's been a lot of not making the playoffs. I think in these next 9 games, if they could even just win 5 of them, right? If they go 5-4 and it's a winning record, it's like, it's not where we want to be, but it's a hell of a lot better than we would expect against these teams that are all contending for, you know, National League World Series, which to be honest is more impressive to make it out of the National League, would say a lot for this team, because it puts us in a position where you force the team to have to be buyers. look at us completely differently despite this 10-game winning streak. And I think the momentum, the vibes, and I just think even the confidence, because this is the type of team, we've said it the last couple of years, they've had the pieces, they've had the talent, they have the athleticism, they have the batting average, they've never really had the defense, I'll pause there, but they've had enough intangibles, and they have Alex Cora, which, you know what, we all waver on him, right? Like, 1 week we want to fire him, the next he's like the greatest thing since sliced bread, right? And he's probably somewhere in the middle. But he's a good enough manager, especially in the American League. There's not a lot of great managers in the MLB right now, to be honest with you. He's one of the few that are probably top five, I would say, at this point, regardless of where you stand on him. And you mix all those things and you put confidence in the mix, which we have not had, experience. I think this team could do something. Do I think they're going to win the World Series? No. But ALCS appearance and, you know, pushing it to a six-game series at least? Yeah, I don't say why not. Especially as long as we don't get the Tigers the first round, I would feel confident in that.
Yeah, agreed. And look, they already kind of passed their first test. We said that Rays series was going to be, you know, the first of many tests, right? Pass that with flying colors. So now are the Rays, you know, up to the same level as the Cubs and the Dodgers? Of course not. No. But they're still a contending team. They're still a team that could potentially get in your way. So, you know, they passed that first test. Now we just got to see how they do with the others.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because I decided just before this stream not too long ago to pull up to see how those three National League opponents are doing, you know, because obviously a win-loss record, April wins don't necessarily reflect on the team you are right now. The Cubs are playing decent baseball, but they're far and removed from their hot start. Their April was 15-9. Their May was 18-9, just absolutely electric. Then June, 13-13, July, 8-4. They're playing good baseball, no doubt, but they aren't the unbeatable juggernaut that they were to start the year right now. Sort of same thing goes for the Phillies, really. 14-12 start, they had that 19-9 May that was brilliant. Then a 14-13 June, a 5-6 July, very mortal. The Dodgers, funnily enough, coming off a 17-10 June, out to a 5-7 July so far. So no team is infallible. Certain cracks are always going to start to show. The interesting thing about the All-Star break is that every single one of these teams is going to be looking at themselves, at their recent performance, and saying, how can we do better? What are we doing wrong? How can we fix this? They're going to tinker. And by the time that we meet these guys, I mean, who knows what we're going to look like? Who knows what they're going to look like? But right now, I dare say that for the last 2 months, we've been playing better baseball than any of those guys.
You know, what's interesting about this year going into the All-Star break and then approaching the trade deadline is, you know, generally every year, you have a couple of teams aiming for the same thing, right? Like you maybe have one or two teams looking for something and one or two looking for something else that are all contending. This year, every contender is looking for the same thing. Everyone's looking for that like quasi 1B, 2A starting pitcher and bullpen depth. And then a first baseman or a third baseman here. But like as far as pitching, it's like everyone is going to be fighting for the same exact thing, which is good because it means that there's a lot of teams that have the same flaws that we do. The bad is, man, whoever's going to win these trade battles is going to have to give up a lot in a year like this where everyone's looking for the same thing.
Definitely.
All right, so we got another interesting one. It's one of our regulars here, Randy Clemens, at Boston Randy is his handle. And his hot take, if the Sox are buyers and the Rangers are sellers, send Duran, the password, and Blaze Jordan to Texas for Nate Eovaldi. Nate is 7-3 with a 1.58 ERA and a 0.846 whip. He has 2 years left on his contract worth $53 million. That is exactly the example of what I was talking about because there's probably a lot of people in the market. And while Nathan Eovaldi is a great pitcher, that does seem like a lot at face value to give up. What you guys say?
So I like the idea. I love the idea of bringing Eovaldi back. He's having a, you know, career year for him. He's staying healthy, which is important. You know, I'm a little concerned about taking on the rest of that contract because I don't know. I feel like at some point, I mean, he's what, 35 now? Like at some point the drop is going to happen and I don't want it to necessarily happen here. The only thing about that trade that to me, I don't love, I don't like giving up the password, Yostinson Garcia. He's, you know, a big right-handed bat in your system right now. And look, your outfield is full. So, you know, a lot of people are saying there's no room for him anyway. I get that. But again, having too much talent, not a bad thing. And I don't like trading him and Duran in the same package. If I'm trading Duran, I'm keeping Garcia like that, because Garcia is my Duran replacement at some point. I also don't think that trade makes sense for the Rangers, because they're a game under 500, so they're 48-49. They're not having a great year. I'm not convinced that they think they're out of it, but if they are selling, if they're trading Nate Eovaldi, then they are absolutely selling, right? So why would they want to take on Duran? They would probably just want prospects if they're selling. They're not going to want 28-year-old Jaron Duran, who, you know, yeah, he's under team control, but at some point you're going to have to pay him. They're going to want a package probably headlined by the password. They might want a package headlined by Christian Campbell. Is that price too steep? I don't know, because at this point, I don't know what Christian Campbell is. Is he your best right-handed hitting prospect and he's a can't-miss right-handed power bat? Or did you screw him up already? And now he's got the yips. And, you know, I know he hit a home run in Worcester the other day, but he really had still been kind of struggling down there since being sent down. So I don't know what Christian Campbell is. So to me, I love the idea. I would do it. But I wouldn't trade Duran and Garcia. To me, it's one or the other. If they want Duran because they think they're still in it, I'd be intrigued by that. I'm not sure Eovaldi is the guy I'm trading Duran for, because again, in my world, I want like a king's ransom for Jaron Duran. I don't want to just give him away. And I know Eovaldi's having a great year, so it's not necessarily a giving away kind of thing. But yeah, I would do the trade, but you got to pick one or the other. If you want prospects, fine. I'll give you a package headlined around Garcia. If you want Major League ready, I'm not sure I'm willing to give you Duran. That's kind of where I'm a little bit on the fence on that one.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that it is too much to give away both guys. I especially like the password because Rob Refsnyder is floating the idea of retirement. He was even last year. And Garcia really slides really perfectly into that Refsnyder role, but Refsnyder plus, because from what I understand, Yastenson Garcia can actually play some pretty good defense out there. So you have a nice right-handed bat. If you are still concerned about Abreu's ability to hit lefties, if you think that he does need a platoon, maybe that would be a great platoon going forward in the future of those two. I would probably want to hold on to at least one of those guys. I think that giving up both, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot a little bit. Eovaldi is right now, without question, one of the best pitchers in the league this year. I mean, that dude is absolutely dealing, and I would love to be reunited with him. I think a big part of it for me would be getting the Rangers to eat a little bit of that money at the tail end, you know, because it's the rest of this year, then his age 36 and 37 seasons. I'm sure he will be good. I'm not sure if he'll be this, you know. It's always interesting because he's a guy who's had a few Tommy Johns now. And it's funny because they say that, you know, that elbow will continue to nag you. But the past 2 years, he's had pretty consistent amounts of starts. I mean, 25 games started back in 2023, 29 starts last year. Not too bad. And this year, like I said, just absolutely dealing. The guy is honestly like one of those sneaky names where, depending on how the last couple months go, a couple Cy Young votes might go his way. I'm with you, Jason, on trading Duran. I would like a guy who I'm at least going to get 3 years of control out of, which is Eovaldi, to be fair. It's this year and two more. But I mean, I'm just in love with the name Chris Bubich right now when it comes to a guy like Duran. I'm like, give me a 27-year-old or something that the Royals probably aren't going to dig into their pockets enough to, you know, extend. And, you know, he's only in one more year of his contract. Maybe we can extend him a little bit. It does hurt me to give up Duran for anything that isn't, I don't know, a real solid no-brainer. And Eovaldi has a couple of red flags, I guess, that concern me, which are really just tied to his age. I mean, it really is just that. That being said, if we traded for Eovaldi, I'd be psyched. I mean, that would be our 1-2 punch with Crochet. So if we're in absolute win now mode this year, absolutely. You know, it'll be really interesting to see what the Rangers do, though. I agree. I'm not too sure what the average like age of the roster is right now, if they're looking to do a full rebuild or just a retooling maybe to go into next year?
Yeah, I would say they're probably somewhere in between that rebuild and a retool. It's a great take, Randy. You got some great takes actually from all of you guys tonight, so thank you. But it's a tough one for me. You know, I would love to have Eovaldi. And you know what? If he was 30 and it was like we were in the position the Tigers were in and our number two or three guy went down, this is a no-brainer move, right? Where you're like, you're clearly the front runner. You're probably going to the World Series, and this is that piece. I would pull the trigger at that point. But we're not the Tigers. He is closer to 35. Yeah, he's got two more years, a reasonable deal, especially if they eat some of the money. I don't like getting rid of both guys. And I certainly, especially with the age of Eovaldi, I don't like getting rid of Duran, because right now, Eovaldi's not going to be part of the picture for the next 5 years. And I mean, if you're getting rid of Duran, two things have to be accomplished. Number one, that person's got to be a part of the team now that's going to help us now, which Eovaldi checks that box. But there's got to be some length to it, because we get more out of Duran than 2 years. Even with his skills diminishing, he'd still be much better than Eovaldi probably will be in 2 years relative to their positions. So that's one. I think if you're getting rid of both those guys, I want to see Joe Ryan in that trade. If we're getting a pitcher and you're giving away the password and Jaron Duran. You know, the other thing with, you know, we kind of just skipped over Blaze Jordan, but I don't know if I'm ready to get rid of Blaze Jordan just yet, because we don't have other holes on this team solidified long-term. We don't know what's going to happen at third base. Yeah, we think it's going to be Bregman, but you know, we could screw that up. I mean, let's just be honest. We could screw that up. We also don't have a first baseman long-term. Now, I'm not saying he's the answer for either one of those positions on our team, but he might be a part of the answer of helping us figure out who that person's going to be. So I think just throwing him into a trade to get a pitcher, especially one that's close to 35, and that's still got a lot of money still left over when we're not quite ready to say that we're going to be in the World Series, would be irresponsible, especially if you're putting Duran and the password in that trade. So while I like it in theory, I'm not ready to make that move with all the things that were involved.
Yeah, it's a great point about Blaze Jordan too, because I mean, he just got to AAA, so we don't know how he's going to do there, right? Let's kind of wait and see how he does. He's still only, I think, 22. So, you know, he's still very young. And like you said, Bregman could be out of here after this year. I mean, that contract gives him all the leverage in the world. And Tristan Casas, like, he's not going to be ready to start next year. He's going to need, you know, a ton of time to rehab that injury. I mean, that was a really bad one. So, and then who knows? Like, an injury like that could ruin your career. I mean, I hope that's not true. But some guys, they have a leg injury like that, they never come back the same. So, we don't know what we're going to get out of Tristan Casas. And yeah, like, we don't have anyone else, you know, knocking down the door to get to either of those two positions. If I'm making the trade for Eovaldi, especially with the Rangers, trade away one of the 10,000 shortstops that Chaim Bloom drafted while he was here. I mean, trade away, you know, Nizan Zanatello or Franklin Arias or, you know, whatever. Because look, they got Corey Seager over there, and he's a great player, but he's in his 30s now. He's not going to be there forever. Give him like a 19-year-old shortstop that Bloom drafted and, you know, throw him in the deal instead of Blaze Jordan. I think that you've got to be careful with your positional depth here. So, yeah, it's a good point about him too. Like, if you are going to trade prospects for Eovaldi, make sure you're dealing away from positions of strength. You know, don't just trade away your best right-handed outfielder hitting prospect, and don't trade away your only corner infield prospect, because then if Casas isn't the same and Bregman leaves, now you're really in a hole. So I think that's a great point about Jordan. Like, be very careful with the trade packages that you put together for teams, like, you know, selling guys like Nate Eovaldi, because yes, like, you have a young roster and most of your guys are up now and established, but again, the corners are big question marks for 2026 and going forward. So they got to be careful with that.
Definitely. You know, a couple things I'd like to just shout out from the chat. Thank you guys so much for contributing, by the way. Salty Grampy, great name, by the way, 2367, not only mentioned trading for Eovaldi, but also Christian Vasquez. I think that Vasquez is an interesting name, honestly. He's in the last year of his contract. His bat hasn't been phenomenal this year, but Wong certainly hasn't either. And Vasquez, I mean, he's not striking out this year. He's showing good discipline. And ultimately, I mean, he's a guy the Red Sox know, and we know the Red Sox loved. How would you guys feel about a little reunion with the guy?
For the right price, I'd be open to it. I mean, the guy was great at peppering the monster. Always did well for us. Listen, at this point, I would take either one of the three of us to back up Narvaez over Wong at this point. I think Wong just got his first hit of the season in the Rays series, it felt like. Depends on what we're giving up. I certainly wouldn't give up anything of like crazy value, but I'd be open to a reunion.
I mean, if it's like this kind of trade, if you're trading for Christian Vasquez, it's got to be like a player to be named later or cash. Oh, yeah. Like, I'm not giving up any, even a low level prospect for this guy. Okay. Cause look, Connor Wong has sucked this year, but Christian Vasquez has too. Now, he hasn't sucked as bad as Wong. So would I take him back? Sure. And maybe you plug him back in here. You know, he's back with Alex Cora. He's back with some of his old teammates. Like, you know, maybe he likes it here. I don't know. Maybe he performs a little bit better. But yeah, it's got to be that kind of trade. Like, player to be named later or cash. I'm not giving up anything else beyond that for Christian Vasquez. But would I do it? 100%. Yeah.
I agree completely. You know, Salty Grampy also said something else, along with some of the other members of the chat having a little discussion here regarding Duran's chemistry impact, the intangibles that we've been discussing on the podcast for a few episodes now. Mitch Cohen said the same thing. Do you think a Duran trade would significantly impact the team's mojo or chemistry? Timmy D, Duran's biggest benefit to the team is chemistry. It's really true. I mean, it's one of those things that you hate to mess with. Devers, as good of a player as he was, didn't really seem to have a connection with the guys, whereas Duran is like this electric type of player that, with us playing the baseball that we're playing, I would hate to say goodbye to, just because I would be a little bit afraid of how it would impact things. I mean, you go back to 2004, you look at the Nomar trade, but there was even some weird stuff with Nomar that year about him beefing a little bit with certain guys in the clubhouse and whatnot. So Durant doesn't have that type of ego, it doesn't seem. He doesn't have that type of negativity around him that certain stars have had in the past, or even absent of negativity, apathy. Durant's a guy that not only the fans love, but the players love. And honestly, that is one of my biggest hangups, funnily enough, on trading the guy.
Yeah, it's a fair point. You got away with it with the Devers one, right? Because he's a superstar player, everyone's tearing their hair out. How could you possibly trade this guy? I think it's pretty clear he was a tremendous pain in the ass. And later on, people hated it at the time, but we learned that Nomar behind the scenes was too, right? Like, that trade had to happen. And look, they won the World Series after they traded him. So, you know, there's something to be said for that. I think Duran is pretty well liked, especially by his teammates. I don't know how the front office feels about him, and I'm not sure how Cora feels about him. I think at times he frustrates them. But for the most part, his teammates really like him. He gets along well with, you know, he's always talking with Meyer and Anthony and those young guys. And I think he is a good example for them, because he's a guy who came up and struggled mightily when he first came up. I mean, everyone remembers the inside the park home run that he gave up. I mean, that's forever going to be, you know, one of his lowlights. And it's important to have a guy like that for the guys like Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer. It's like, yeah, you're going to have an epic mess up one of these days. It's okay. You'll get past it. Just, you know, I got past it. Like, I think it's important to have a guy with that kind of experience, not just a guy like Alex Bregman, who came up and I think was instantly awesome as soon as he debuted. So I agree. I don't want to mess with the chemistry. And again, that's why I keep saying Duran, it's got to be a king's ransom. It's got to be like that Juan Soto trait that I keep referencing. Like, unless there's a future ace and a future James Wood involved, or it's a Junior Caminero type, I'm not doing it, because I'm not messing with the chemistry. It's just that things are going too well right now. I think that would really, that would put a big hole in the clubhouse.
Yeah. I think, you know, when you try to really encapsulate the personalities in this team, like, you got Bregman, he's the mentor. And I think Duran is really the example for everything that you just said, Jason, right? Like, he's a shining example of failing and not giving up, being able to overcome it, great work ethic. And regardless of some of the quote unquote antics that some people, depending on your opinions on things outside of baseball, he does everything right as far as when it comes to the media and like what he should do as far as from an attitude and what he brings to the actual major league team. And there's a lot to be said for that because, you know, to your point, Jason, we didn't recognize like how much of an albatross some of the other attitudes that we had on this team were to the team until it came out, specifically with Devers and then even other players over the years. So I think with the amount of young guys that we have on the team and then looking to come up and make the team, they're going to be a part of the next decade. You need to have certain faces. You need to have a dad, but you also need to have a cool uncle.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And I think in terms of vibes and whatnot, it reminds me of the 2013 team a little bit. And the old saying where, you know, back in the day it was with 25 players, but you can easily amend it to 26, where it's not about making a team of the 26 best players. It's the 26 right players. You know, there's a lot to be said about that. Barry Bonds never won a ring. You know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how good you are. If you are surrounded by guys who can't get it done, and very specifically in this case, if you are a person who contributes to an atmosphere, a beer and chicken type of atmosphere where guys don't really care to get it done, that will end your season before it even begins. It's so true that morale, chemistry, all this stuff. I mean, baseball players, you cannot find a more superstitious group on the planet. These guys are all about genetically engineering the best vibes humanly possible to go out there and play a ball game that is ultimately incredibly physically taxing, emotionally taxing, mentally draining, traveling as much as these guys do, playing almost every day. There's a lot on these guys' minds. I know that it's easy, you know, to go with the boo-hoo, you know, suck it up and make your millions type of thing that a lot of athletes do get caught with, and rightfully so in many ways. You do hear certain athletes that complain about certain things that get a little ridiculous and out of touch. But you can't deny that this sport is incredibly difficult to play full-time. Incredible amount of pressure. And Duran is one of those guys who, him being so open about his struggle with mental health, I do agree that he's the type of guy who can take younger guys under his wing a little bit. And the 2013 comparison that I keep going back to is just like, you got a bunch of guys who, you look at their careers, these weren't superstars. These aren't Hall of Famers. These aren't sure things. It was just a bunch of dudes. It was guys having the best year of their lives in an important year for Boston, and going out there and playing great baseball and just running over super teams while doing it. I mean, those teams in 2013 were electric that we beat, not only on our way to the postseason, but in the postseason. And I think that if we're going to win any meaningful games this year, if we're going to make it any reasonable amount of distance, you need to have a clubhouse that just loves showing up and loves playing the game. And that does seem to be what we fostered so far this year. So that's definitely a big point that we can give to everyone involved.
Yeah, I think the reality is this. We've got a big second half coming up, and we realistically have to win 35 games. If you look at the way, I mean, we're a little bit behind the trajectory that we were last year. We were 10 games over 500 this year. We're 8 games over 500 going into the break. I think we only won 27 or 28 games. With our record now, if we win 35, more than likely we will end up with the second wild card, maybe the third if everyone goes on a really big run, but that'll get you to the playoffs. The question is this group going to be the one to do it? I think they can, but remains to be seen.
Yeah, and to your point about 2013, I mean, we mocked some of those signings going into that year. I remember people saying, like, really? Shane Victorino? Like, the Phillies didn't want him anymore. Why the hell did you pick him up? And Mike Napoli, who, you know, sucks defensively, but maybe runs into a few homers. And Johnny Gomes, who can't do anything right. But it was the perfect blend. Those guys were happy. They had good team chemistry. And they all kind of played their asses off and banded together. And look what happened. So, you know, and I think this team is more talented than the 2013 team, at least on paper. So, yeah, if the chemistry's there and the talent's there and you've got young guys who are getting better and better every day. I mean, look at Sidan Rafael right now. I mean, should have been an all-star, major snub, but he will be next year. I mean, so if you got guys taking steps forward like that where every month they just get better and better, you keep that chemistry alive too, you might have something really special cooking in September and October.
Absolutely. I think you go back to earlier in the season when the Red Sox were just sucking defensively, losing games that they had no reason to lose, dropping games to the Blue Jays, to the White Sox, just embarrassing types of losses. And I think that, I mean, you guys have all heard it, you know, the listeners and us, we heard ourselves saying this months ago about how this team is playing so far below its talent. It's ridiculous. We were so infuriated, and rightfully so. And I think that when we saw a lot of the players and whatnot, they knew it too. They were saying, you know, we're better than this. And not in the way that you're hearing the Yankees talk. You know, we hear the Yankees talk about going through a losing streak and they say it's right in front of us. Oh, we're a better team than this, all this. We weren't, you know, there wasn't any arrogance when the Red Sox were doing it. These were guys who were just beating themselves up saying, what just happened to me out there? Why can't I, you know, why am I not playing like I should be playing? And after all of these months, it seems like they've really worked out a lot of the kinks. They're playing great baseball. You have Crochet, who's looking like the best version of himself right now, taking two clunky starts and coming out and throwing a complete game like he did. That means a lot, you know? Having Giolito and Bayo suck at the start and figure things out. I mean, these guys are electric. Chapman's been great since the start, but a lot of the hitters, Rafael, have been heating up. Story coming out of that slump. Anthony and Meyer joining this roster, ready to contribute. I think that if we add a good starter, whether it is Eovaldi, whether it is Joe Ryan, whether it is some other name, I saw Randy Clemens mention Ken Rosenthal saying Charlie Morton, which we won't spend too much time talking about that. I will say that was my reaction too, Jason, for any audio listeners, people who don't have the video feed. Jason just looked like he smelled a bad smell, and I don't blame him for that. If you look at Charlie Morton's last seven starts, he seems to have turned something around. I would not want that necessarily to be our trade because that seems like you're taking a gamble. But if that's the guy, then that's the guy, you know? But we need another starting pitcher that can go out there and go with Crochet and fit between him and Bayo and Giolito. We need, I think, one more hitter to sort of slot into maybe Toro's role, assuming Toro doesn't come out of this All-Star break like a bat out of hell, like he very well might, who knows. But the team's dangerous, you know? They're playing to their talent right now. In fact, maybe they're playing a little above it. If they can continue to elevate themselves, I mean, good things are going to happen. Ultimately, the rest of this month is going to be extremely, extremely interesting to watch. You guys have any closing thoughts you want to add?
No, I'll just say again, like, you know, trade deadline is going to be really where you're going to find out, are we all in or were we not quite so all in? But I think they'll make some moves, but I'm not expecting a home run type of move. I actually wouldn't be surprised if it was like a Charlie Morton for, again, like, a low-level minor leaguer, Christian Vasquez for a player to be named later, like stuff like that. I think that's more where we're headed, but we'll see.
I think for the first time in a long time, regardless of who the people that we bring in are, it's going to be for now. It's not going to be about the future. It's not going to be about selling to buy or sell this wavering. It's going to be for this year's team. Let's hope it's for the better.
I agree. Sucks. Ultimately, winning championships is a cure-all. If we go all in and we win it this year through some miracle, then really what happens next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, we can say, you know what, in good conscience, hey, you know what, we sold off this year for that championship. But the trick there is obviously if you go too all in and end up in a bad position, don't win this year, don't win next year, don't win 5 years from now, that's when you start to get into a death spiral. So you got to hope that the front office is going to be competent here. This is going to be probably the biggest challenge of Breslow's career so far. And it's going to be very interesting to see where his position is come, you know, August 1st. Because ultimately, these next 2 weeks, followed by the trade deadline, that's going to say loads about how this baseball team is run and what it thinks about itself, really. Thank you guys so much for joining us. It's been a great episode of Hot Takes. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for throwing them out in the comment section, whether it's the live feed or on the Twitter poll. Once more, I have been Nick, joined by Jason and Chris. We have been the Bastards of Boston. Hope the rest of you guys have a great rest of your day, and take care, everyone. See you next time.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply.